A Pew Research poll released just recently finds that about 6 out of 10 Americans think that science and religion are in conflict, but they also found that highly religious Americans are less likely than others to see conflict between faith and science. Well, we're going to talk about the whole issue of science and does it somehow disprove God, as some atheists like to claim, with Dr. Stephen Meyer, who's written a couple of best-selling books on the subject of origins, including the book Darwin's Doubt. Dr. Meyer, it's great to have you on the program again.
Jerry, it's always good to be with you. Thanks for calling.
Sure. Sorry it's been so long. All right, so here we go. Bill Maher said on his television program last month, he said this to Richard Dawkins, one of the leading atheists in our world, the more you explain how wonderful and amazing science is, the more the other side says, well, yeah, because God did it. First, let's start with his question or his whole issue there.
Well, actually, that's a misportrayal of what people who believe in God say and think. It's a straw man. People think there's actually evidence in the natural world that points to God. They're not just saying, whoa, it's so awesome, therefore it must have been God. There are specific things about the natural world that I argue, for example, point to a designing intelligence. You have digital code inside living cells, little teeny miniature machines. In the realm of physics, we're discovering that the laws of physics and chemistry are finely tuned to allow for the possibility of life, suggesting a fine tuner. So there's specific attributes of the natural world that point to a designing mind. They are things that we associate with intelligent activity. So it's not just a generic awe or inability to explain that leads people to invoke a deity, but rather specific attributes of the natural world that suggest the activity of a designing mind.
Hmm. All right, now here's what Richard Dawkins said to Bill Maher in reference to that question. He said, I think that the wonder of science above all is precisely that God didn't do it. End of quote.
Well, Dawkins has been flogging this message for quite a long time. He started with his first major bestseller, The Blind Watchmaker, back in 1986. But he really hit his stride with the publication of The God Delusion in around 2007, along with a number of the other new atheists who, in a sense, formed a new literary genre. And their argument is run like this. They say that if you understand science properly, then belief in God becomes untenable. And Dawkins unpacks that argument further and says that the reason that science shows that belief in God is untenable is that the strongest argument for God's existence was always the design argument, because that argument was based on publicly accessible scientific arguments and or scientific evidence. And he says, but since Darwin's time, we've understood that there is no evidence of design in nature, no evidence of design in living things, only the appearance or the illusion of design, because we now know that there's an unguided, undirected mechanism known as natural selection, acting on random mutations and other kinds of variations that produce that appearance of design. So you have design without a designer. You have the illusion of design being produced by a purely unguided, undirected process that can mimic the powers of a designing intelligence. Now, that's classical Darwinism, and it's also modern neo-Darwinism, which is the theory of biological origins that Dawkins is hawking to the general public. But the problem that with the whole thing is that there are a lot of problems with that theory. It doesn't actually hold up. The evidence is against it, and many leading people in the field of evolutionary biology are now rejecting neo-Darwinism and saying we need a new theory of evolution, at just the point that Dawkins has convinced the whole world that, or apparently the whole world, that there is no evidence of actual design because Darwinism explains everything.
You mean, so in other words, and I think we've had this discussion before, but basically scientists are saying one thing to the world, but then another thing internally, just privately to themselves?
Dawkins is saying one thing to the world, but people in his own field, in evolutionary biology, recognize that the situation is a whole lot more complicated than he's letting on. In particular, there are leading evolutionary biologists who are saying that we live in a post-Darwinian world, that Darwinian evolution in its modern form called neo-Darwinism is inadequate to explain the major changes in the history of life. It explains, well, the small-scale variations, how Galapagos finches get bigger, slightly bigger, slightly smaller beaks in response to different weather patterns, that kind of thing. But it doesn't explain where we get birds or animals in the first place. And this was the subject of my recent book, Darwin's Doubt, that the major events in the history of life, events such as the Cambrian explosion, where you have lots of new forms of animal life arising very abruptly in the fossil record, these kinds of events are not well explained by the mutation natural selection mechanism, and yet that's what Dawkins says replaces the concept of an intelligent designer. The mutation selection mechanism is a kind of designer substitute mechanism in Darwinian thinking because it allegedly can do the work of an intelligent agent, but in fact, it can only do very little work. It can explain very small-scale changes, but not the big innovations in the history of life, certainly not the whole new forms or body plans that arise in the fossil record, and certainly it does not explain the origin of the information, the digital code that's stored in the DNA molecule that's necessary to build those new forms of life. So, in a sense, the new atheists are I think, guilty of a massive bluff to the culture. They're claiming that science has undermined belief in God, because Darwinism explains away design, but when you get into the technical literature, even in evolutionary biology, you have lots of leading scientists saying, no, neo-Darwinism doesn't provide an adequate mechanism for explaining away the appearance, the most striking appearances of design, and therefore we need a new theory of evolution, but no one's really come up with one that has won universal assent or anything like it. And so it's really not the case that design has been explained away by an undirected process, and therefore, the whole premise of Dawkins' new atheism is actually false.
Yeah, I remember a line from your book, and it's been a couple of years since I read it, but I remember this really well, and you were quoting somebody else, but the line was along these lines. Darwin may have taught us about the survival of the species, but not the arrival of the species, something to that effect.
Yeah, very close. It's neo-Darwinism explains the survival but not the arrival of the fittest.
Yeah.
So it explains, once you've got something, it explains how it varies, how that organism will vary in response to various environmental stressors and so forth. So you get variation within the limits of a gene pool, but it doesn't explain where you get the genes in the first place or where you get that original animal form. And that's the big problem, and it's the problem posed by the Cambrian explosion and other major events, morphological innovations they're called in the history of life, where you get fundamentally new forms of life arising. And that's widely recognized in the technical literature and evolutionary biology. Yet Richard Dawkins speaks for science as an evolutionary biologist. And so I think he's bluffing, and he's been getting away with he's getting away with murder, intellectually speaking, and I think it's time that he got called on it.
Well, now, you earned your Ph.D. in the study of science at Cambridge University, and, of course, Dr. Dawkins used to teach at Oxford University. Could this be some sort of Cambridge-Oxford rivalry here? No, I'm just kidding.
I don't think so. There's a great mathematician and philosopher of science at Oxford named John Lennox who debated
terrific.
Dawkins.
Yeah.
And he's made many of the same points that I'm making in this conversation.
Yeah, I was being facetious.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a heavy rivalry over there. You know, they won't even say the other school's name. They'll just refer to the other place.
You know? Wow. Well, all I know is that C.S. Lewis used to teach at both at one point, in his or different points, rather, in his career. So now going back to this design issue, I think it was John Lennox who mentioned that, look, if you're at the beach and you see that somebody has written in the sand with their finger John, J-O-H-N, you would assume that there was intelligent design behind, you know, that writing that down. And yet when you look at the DNA code and sequencing in creatures and so forth, I mean, it's just so incredible that you've got, an intelligent designer in the coding here.
Well, there's about 3 billion characters in the human genetic message as encoded in DNA, and it's in some ways metaphorical to refer to the information in DNA as a message, but we can certainly refer to it accurately as digital information. And this was the great discovery of Watson and especially Francis Crick. Crick proposed in 1957 something called the sequence hypothesis that was subsequently confirmed. And that the sequence hypothesis says that the four chemical subunits along the interior of the DNA molecule, that twisting helix that we all know from biology class, those four chemical subunits called bases or nucleotide bases function like alphabetic characters in a written text or digital characters in a section of machine code, like the zeros and ones that we use in software, which is to say that the A's, C's, G's, and T's in the DNA, the nucleotide bases, are not, they don't perform a function in virtue of their shape or their chemical properties. Rather, it's their specific arrangement in accord with the code. So what you actually have in the DNA molecule is a form of digital code, digital information. And the question that raises, fundamentally, is where did that information come from? The evolutionary process degrades information. Mutations are random changes in zeros and ones, or rather A's, C's, G's, and T's. And we know from our experience in the software world that if you randomly change zeros and ones, the digital characters in software, you're going to degrade the information that's present in your computer program long before you'll ever produce anything fundamentally new, a new software program or operating system. And the same thing turns out to be true in life. As the mutations start to randomly change the A's, C's, G's, and T's, the characters in the genetic text, they end up degrading the information and causing degradation of protein structures. That's what the DNA makes. So you have the same kind of problem. So the mechanism of mutation and selection, which is the Darwinian designer substitute mechanism, actually is not a plausible means of generating new digital information. And yet that's what you need to have in order to build any new form of life. And so that's the problem. The Darwinian mechanism doesn't generate information, and yet we do know of a cause which is capable of generating information, only one, in fact, and that cause is intelligence. And so when we see information embedded in the DNA molecule and see big infusions of information in the history of life, when we see lots of new form and structure arise in the fossil record, I argue in my books that we're seeing evidence of the activity of a designing mind and a designing intelligence in the history of life. Not a designer substitute, not the illusion of design, but evidence of actual design, of intelligent design. And so Dawkins really hasn't refuted the design argument at all. I think, in fact, it's stronger now than ever because of our discoveries of what's going on inside DNA.
It's interesting. I remember one time you used an analogy, or you gave an analogy, and yet you said by your own admission, this is very simplistic, and the odds of life just happening by chance or whatever without intelligent design are much greater than this. But here it goes. Here's your analogy. About Scrabble. If you're playing Scrabble and you just, spill out the letters, and then all of a sudden you basically spill out the letters and you write out the Declaration of Independence, which is a very long document.
Well, if you say pick the Scrabble letters out of the Scrabble bag at random, it won't take very long before you end up with gibberish.
Right.
And there's a reason for that, and this is true of all what are called combinatorial or typographic systems, and that is that the arrangement of characters that give you function or meaning are incredibly rare in relation to the number of arrangements that will give you gibberish or non-function. And this turns out to be true in the case of DNA, just as it does with Scrabble letters or digital code in computer code. So if you're picking out those Scrabble letters, you might start out with, you might get lucky and get a little word like bat or bit or something.
Right,
but if you
keep
drawing the letters, invariably, the odds are overwhelming that as the sequence increases in length, it will end up being non-functional,
it'll be
gibberish.
Right.
And the same thing is true in DNA, and that's the mathematical reason why random changes invariably degrade meaning. And so it's just a crummy mechanism for trying to account for the origin of information. And as scientists have tried to come up with other ones, they haven't been able to come up with anything better. And so really there's only one known cause in the entire universe
intelligence.
That is capable of generating information. And this is what we know from our uniform and repeated experience. And that causes intelligence. So,
DarwinsDoubt.com for more information. Dr. Meyer, we're out of time. I'd like to have you on again soon sometime. In fact, I want to ask you about Dr. Stanley Miller's lightning experiment that they make a big deal out of even to this day. DarwinsDoubt.com. Thank you, Dr. Meyer. All the best.
Thanks for having me on. You bet. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye now. For Vocal Point, I'm Jerry Newcomb.